Good evening. Here is the news for parrots.
Catapult the propaganda.
The truth is out there.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sleepy Gilbert, and welcome to the bunker. I'm going to take a nap soon. I've had two nights in a row with very little sleep, and I'm not sure what's going on. But, you know, I keep reading on our forum and getting email from listeners, and other people aren't sleeping well. I don't know. Is there something in the air? Could it be the benzene in our drinks?
Well, it's possible. Perhaps the strange things being piped into our water supply.
Oh, that could be. I don't know. But seriously,
or possibly just spring, late spring, early summer fever. Perhaps the approaching solstice is working some strange electromagnetic
force. It's
that big
moon.
Yes. The large, oversized moon in the sky. Well, welcome back to the bunker. It is the 14th of June, 2006, just past 7 bunker savings time. And we've got part two of our interview with Janet Phelan tonight. We'll continue discussing the really trying times that she's had with over the last few years. And it's really sad because it was connected to the way her mother, Dr. Emily Phelan, passed away.
Yep.
And the fact that she was more or less prevented by legal means from seeing her mother in her final days.
And that is so frustrating because, well, you've watched what your mom's gone through, you know, with the passing of your dad and how many legal hoops she has to jump through. And it's one thing to have that where they are, you know, it's just the way the system is set up. It's another thing to get the really clear impression that it's more than just the system.
Right. So part two of that interview will come your way in just a few minutes. Meanwhile, around the rest of the world, lots and lots of police and military activity all over the globe.
ICE is nice.
Yeah. Here in the United States, the immigration and... what does the C stand for? Immigration conglomeration entity or something? Immigration.
I don't know.
Checkpoint enforcement or something like that. It's the immigration enforcement wing of the United States government.
Let me look it up.
Yeah.
Keep talking.
And
our listeners are out there shouting like the kids that watch Blue's Clues.
Oh, it's right here in the article right in front of me. Immigrations and Customs Enforcement.
See,
there we go.
I'm too sleepy to give you an answer there. It's customs.
Low
it's
blood
customs,
sugar.
Customs, Blue.
Oh, we got it. They've been going around the country on a crackdown against people who are in the United States illegally and have arrested, since May 26th, over 2,000 illegal immigrants.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. But when you consider that there are an estimated 11 million, which we think is low, but if we accept the conservative estimate of 11 million, this is a drop in the bucket.
Oh, it really is. This is, you know, good for them. You know, I'm happy that they're doing it. I assume that the people they're arresting have broken the law other than just being immigrants because they don't see illegal immigrants. They don't seem to care much about that.
Sure. Well, it said officials, the article reads that the officials are targeting child molesters, gang members, and other violent criminals or people who have snuck back into the country after a judge threw them out.
I love the name of the whole operation. Operation Return to Sender.
Yeah. Address unknown, which is the case, sadly, for far too many who could get into the country.
That is very true.
There was a press conference given by a congressman from Texas last year at about this time in which he pointed out there was something like 15,000 that had crossed the border just in his sector along the border, his district. And it was a very high percentage were what they call OTMs, other than Mexicans.
Well, the nice thing is from now on, they'll just shoot right through to Canada.
That's right, with that super NAFTA highway.
I know.
That'll be great. I was talking to a fellow up in the oil region of Alberta earlier today, Fort McMurray, where they've got the huge, huge oil sands developments going on up there. I said, you know, this will be great. They get this highway, they'll bus them right up into Winnipeg, and you guys will have all the workers you need.
Yeah.
Because right now, actually, in the oil fields up there, they are so desperate for workers. They've got buses with big signs, you know, driving through Calgary, which is like Houston North, advertising for workers.
Oh, my gosh.
So this will be great. You know, we'll just run them right up Super NAFTA, right up into Calgary, and then on up to Fort McMurray, and solve their employment problem there, and it'll solve the employment problem down along the southern border too. It'd be great.
Welcome to the Calgary Mexican checkpoint.
But you know, we joke about it, but that is precisely why they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
That is precisely why they're doing it.
Yep.
Well, that little incident was taking place today. Meanwhile, we've got things going on. The huge crackdown going on in Baghdad with 75,000 troops and airstrikes and
Operation Lightning or whatever they're calling it over
yeah.
there. You know, it just occurred to me.
Lightning,
now this is total speculation. Oh yes, yeah, Lightning as in SS.
Uh-huh.
You know, this is total speculation. So I've got my hat on. In fact, I'm wearing 5 hats now, but you can't see them. And they're all prize-winning hats, and I bet you wish you had a prize-winning hat, too.
That's right.
Well, with all these hats on my head, it makes me so much more speculative. I'm not even sure I'm here, in fact. We take a look at Bush's trip yesterday to Baghdad. Sudden trip. Really surprised everybody. Well, mm-hmm. That was on the 13th, right?
Yeah.
Well, the 14th. Is one of 2 dates given in the sources that I found today for the a huge feast honoring Isis, which, of course, is nothing more than Semiramis.
That's
Ishtar.
True. Yeah, the wife of Nimrod.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. The basically the template, the archetypical or archetype. of the goddess. And she is the inspiration for goddess worship.
She's the moon goddess. She's the river goddess.
River.
I know. We've got this huge moon out there right now. And the whole point of there's, I think it's called the Night of the Teardrop or something like that.
Yes.
And that's when Isis wept a tear into the Nile and it flooded. And again, this feast is celebrated either June 14th or June 16th.
Mm-hmm.
I saw both dates on a lot of different sites, so we don't know which one it is. But it's really interesting considering he just suddenly had to go over there. Heck, it may not be related at all, but, well, when you hear the stories that we've talked to Tom Horn about,
right.
about possible ceremonies taking place
yeah,
around
in the
old city. Yeah,
yeah, around Babylon. It does make you wonder, what if?
And that's what these hats are for.
Yeah, they kind of focus the waves.
Oh, they do. Yeah. They do. And if you could only see mine.
In Israel, they had a really interesting incident that took place. The border crossing between Egypt and the Gaza Strip is apparently the place you want to go if you've got stuff you really don't want looked at very closely by customs officials. Because a government official with Hamas, the new ruling party in the Palestinian Authority's territory, walked through with a minimum of fuss and muss, less fuss than Alex Jones had getting into Canada for the Bilderberg Conference, with 7 suitcases packed with $20 million in cash.
Well, if Alex Jones had had 7 suitcases with money in it,
he might have had an easy time. Well, it's a good point. The point of this is that Hamas is clearly working around the international boycott.
Because this isn't the first one.
No. This is the third time within the last few weeks to cross over at this particular transit into the Gaza Strip, the Rafah crossing, mm-hmm. with lots and lots of money. Now, he was stopped by European monitors at the border.
Mm-hmm.
To their credit, they stopped him and said, excuse me. And then the militiamen who were there, the Palestinian militiamen, who represent the Force 17 guards, which are pro-Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas, mm-hmm. who is of the Fatah party, not
right.
the Hamas party.
Right.
Said that they would let the representative of Hamas into the country if he would sign an agreement promising to deposit the money into the official Palestinian Authority accounts.
I promise.
Yeah.
Yeah. The minute I get there.
Yeah, he didn't even say that. This gentleman, whose name is, I had it right here highlighted. Zahar is his last name. Said that he would think about it, put the suitcases in his car, and drove away. So the intelligence newsletter Debka file reports that the money, not a single dime of this $20 million nor the previous $4.5 million that was carried in one trip and the $800,000 that came through with the official Hamas spokesman a few weeks ago ever made its way into the official government accounts.
So these guys go out on international fundraising tours, you know, show their slides.
Yes.
And come back with suitcases full of cash.
Yes, that is correct. This was... Okay, here's the gentleman's name. In fact, he's the foreign minister of the Hamas government, Mahmoud Azahar.
Ah.
Yeah, came in through Cairo in Egypt. And the Egyptian authorities just let him right through, and he brought the money in. So this is how Hamas and the Palestinian Authority are getting around the international boycott. So apparently, if you've got something you need to sneak through a customs checkpoint, the one at Rafah there on the border is where you want to go.
Well, Europe supported them for the longest time. And this is how they pay their police, how they pay for sanitation. I mean, this is how they support the movement of the city, the networks of the city. But at the same time, that also goes for, you know, you can't, those Qassam rockets don't come from thin air.
That's
you know?
Right. That's right. And, you know, in fact, it is a difficult time there because they have essentially run out of money. And I, if I remember correctly, there was a story that just kind of blipped across the news radar here the last day or so with the Palestinian government employees storming the their offices demanding to get paid. And
we can't blame them.
No. I mean,
But at the same time, that's the whole point of the boycott.
Exactly. So we've got that going on in the world. And, of course, that's just going to make tensions people a little testy there in Israel and in the Palestinian areas. And all of this upset, all of this turmoil around the world, of course, the tensions between the United States and Iran, coupled with the foolish economic policies of the United States government. You know, the fact that our economy is basically just way in debt as far as the foreign exchange accounts are. Our
economy's a myth.
Our trade deficit.
It's a myth.
Yeah. It has led a lot of investors and advisors to recommend buying precious metals. But what's really strange because, and I do not profess, even with a degree in economics, to have any clue about dealing in precious metals. But gold has dropped 22% in value since May.
Well, I have a theory on that. I'm not an economist, nor do I play one on radio. However, if you want to control a lot of gold and you see that the price is going up, 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 that makes the gold you have worth more, more, more. But if you want more, 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 that means you have to buy it. I don't want to pay that high price.
True.
How can I get that price down? Okay. I'll work with my buddies. They'll start messing around in countries, and they'll start messing around with the stock market, and I'll get somebody to raise rates, and all of a sudden, gold will not be as desirable as, say, bonds.
Yeah.
And gold prices go down.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to buy a whole bunch of gold.
Mm-hmm.
So I get to buy all my gold for a lot cheaper, and then I say to my friends, thanks a lot, here's some of what I saved.
Right.
By buying my gold cheaper.
Uh-huh. And then we'll let the market go back to doing...
Exactly.
You know,
now let it go up.
That's right.
In the meanwhile, the people who panicked...
And bought gold and drove the price up are suddenly seeing the value of what they've just purchased... Now drop 22%.
Right, helps the big guy, hurts the little guy.
Right, and so the little guy is panicking and
selling high.
Exactly, and this is really bizarre because according to what they're saying on the news today, that something like $2 trillion worth of wealth has just sort of vaporized in this worldwide sell-off. I mean,
seems odd. How can they? Okay.
How do you
lose?
Where
did it come from in the first place if it just vanished?
Yeah, exactly.
Vaporized? Can you vaporize? It's like that line from The Rock.
From The Rock, yeah. A body can just vaporize? Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, it really is bizarre because it means that there was no true wealth that had been created there at all.
That's
it's just,
right.
It's just paper. It's smoke and mirrors is what it is, which is what the American economy is primarily at this point.
I know. We all live in a fun house.
Yeah. It's based on speculation. It's like trading baseball cards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We probably moved away from the Middle East just a little too soon
I can steer back over there.
Well, let's steer back over there because there are a couple of other stories.
I'll pull over there because I need to stop anyway.
Yes, you're too tired to be driving.
I know.
There was a very interesting story, and just a you know, in the grand scheme of things, in terms of geopolitics, may seem like not much, but in truth is very significant. From Jerusalem, a former senior leader of the and I'm not going to pronounce this correctly, so forgive me, the Waqf, W-A-Q-F. It's the group that of Islamic custodians who oversee the Temple Mount. Mm-hmm.
This is important, and a listener sent this in.
Yes, and Camille, thank you for forwarding this to our attention. Admitted today that he has come to believe, based on the evidence that has been dug up from the Temple Mount through the years, that the first and second Jewish temples did in fact exist and mm-hmm. stand on the current location of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, mm-hmm. the Dome of the Rock.
Right. This is huge. It is huge because all along, the Palestinians, the Arabs in the area have been saying, no, no, you Jews never had this town.
Right.
What do you mean you had a temple here? That the only proof you have for that is your own scriptures.
Mm-hmm. And why can we believe that?
Exactly.
Believe those. Well, he said that in an exclusive interview to WorldNet Daily, that the custodians, the Al-Aqsa custodians, for years have passed down stories from generation to generation, quietly admitting that they knew that the Jewish temples, the Temple of Solomon mm-hmm. and the temple rebuilt by Herod, had stood mm-hmm. on that location.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's another reason why this is very important, and it has a lot more to do with the whole Palestinian mm-hmm. Jewish problem. It has to do with the fact that there's a certain group of people who really want that third temple built,
mm-hmm.
other than the Jews.
Yeah, and those are the Zionists who are not to be confused
exactly.
with
Jews.
Exactly,
that's a whole different group.
That's correct. So,
and part of that, you can lump in whatever people you want in there. Bilderbergers, Masons, Templars, you name it.
Jesuits,
what
Vatican.
They really yeah. want, what we're finding out, the more and more we study this, is that they're really, in their philosophy, rebuilding the Tower of Babel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was very interesting that we interviewed a young man who's got a great website, King Wells. Great name, King Solomon Wells.
Yeah. I know, I love it.
And he believes that the Babylon prophesied in the book of Revelation is actually going to be Jerusalem.
That's a real departure from everybody
yeah.
else. And, well, you know, we've had a lot of guests on here who have radical ideas.
Yeah. Well, I'll put a link to his website so you can take a look at what he's written about that at his website. It's long and involved, but it stands for The End of the World as We Know It, Interactive.
Teotihuacan.
com. But I'll put a link in the show notes at PIDradio.com because it is another interesting view and just another interesting idea to kind of turn and compare against what's in the Bible so you can, you mm-hmm. know, just, you know, test the idea and see if it fits.
Mm-hmm.
But before we leave the Holy Land, we need to bring this story.
Lest we leave early.
Yes, yes. We need to bring you this story from the West Bank where a family grieves tonight as a young man has been jilted by his American virtual sweetheart.
This is the other end of the story that's been in the press for the last few days about this 16-year-old American young woman,
mm-hmm.
Teenager, who met a young man, 20-year-old man, young man, on MySpace.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly, without telling her parents, took off to meet him, to marry him
yep.
in the West Bank. She had promised, according to the family over there, to sign a marriage contract mm-hmm. and convert to Islam.
Yep. 16-year-old Catherine Lester had been stopped on her way to the airport of Tel Aviv. She had been stopped in Amman, Jordan mm-hmm. during a stopover. And authorities there seized her passport and put her on a plane back home, where presumably she's going to get a stern talking to if she hasn't already.
I think she is home. Based on the picture, it looks like she's with her mother.
Oh, well, that's her other sister.
Oh,
yeah,
well,
that's the other sister.
Shows how sleepy I am.
Yeah, but 20-year-old Abdullah Jinzawi is left in the lurch. They met through MySpace.com, which is that Rupert Murdoch-owned website.
Mm-hmm.
And, boy, you know, I'll tell you, I took a look at that after I saw the story. at the Watcher magazine. And I had not really paid much attention to MySpace.com, mm-hmm. except for those couple times we went there looking for websites of other people who'd gotten themselves into the news. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our daughter's not going there. That's all I can say.
Well, yeah, I have to say, it seems like a great idea.
Yeah.
Okay, I can go on here. I can safely, and that's the quoting marks I'm putting out, mm-hmm. Just meet some friends because I'm bored or whatever. I'm not liked at school. Whatever your reason is.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's because I happen to have odd beliefs, like I think I'm a vampire, because mm-hmm. there are sites similar to MySpace.com that actually, you know, are subcultures.
Right, right.
Subcultures. And they get on there, and sadly, as with many of us, it's not just teens, mm-hmm. you reveal too much.
Yeah. So, and there will be people who take advantage of that. Mm-hmm. And that's why if you're a parent, and we're not slamming MySpace.com because it's a secular website, although I will say some of the big banner ads that got posted right there, you're familiar with the online dating services that advertise on TV all the time that, mm-hmm. that look very, you know, we try to match you up with the yeah. your soulmate and so mm-hmm. forth. And in fact, we'll admit it right now. Sharon and I met mm-hmm. via an online dating service.
Match.com.
Yeah. But there's one that advertises in particular on MySpace.com. At least the few pages I looked at today had really big ads, and they have slogans like, "It's naughty to be nice."
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah. Now, do you want your 16, 15, 13, 12-year-old hanging out looking at pictures of women with cleavage down to their navel in these ads? Because that's what they're mm-hmm. putting up on the site.
Well, Report has those.
Well, that's true. You can see those stories on Fox News at night. Oh, should they be showing this? Should they be showing the lingerie show on CBS television?
Here, just so you know how disgusting it is, we're going to show it to
you. Show you a clip, yeah.
Exactly.
So anyway, be that as it may, the problem that we have with that particular site is that there are predators out there who will take advantage of a younger person's mm-hmm. Natural tendencies to want to socialize through a means like this.
Yeah.
And they have not yet learned through hard experience in life that you have to be, as Jesus said, as wise as serpent.
I know. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens with this one, seriously, legally. Mm-hmm. Because if she wrote something and it can be proven she wrote it, depending on what the laws are over there, who knows? Who governs the law of the internet?
Yeah. Well, and if the United Nations finally gets its way and takes over administration of the internet, mm-hmm. then that raises a whole other mm-hmm. set of legal questions.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Don't know about that.
I mean, is there such a thing as breach of promise when it comes to female to male over there? I don't know.
International agreements. That's a good question. I don't know. Speaking of raising your children, teaching your children well.
Choosing your children well.
Well, okay, let's go there first.
Choose first.
Have the kids, then raise them.
That's right.
Yeah. Wealthy couples are traveling to the United States, and not just for the lovely scenery we have over here.
It is great here.
Yeah.
There's nothing like it.
Mm-hmm. But
buildings, buildings, buildings.
Yeah, this truly is in many, many places.
No, actually, we
God's
do have
country.
A beautiful country.
But they're coming here because of our technical expertise in the area of
in vitro fertilization mm-hmm. and choosing the whether you want a boy or a girl.
Designer children.
Designer jeans. Well, you know what? I was not even aware that this was legal.
I wasn't either. I thought that this was legal in the United Kingdom.
So did I.
But I was not aware that you could do this in fertility clinics here in the United States.
Well, you learn something every day.
Yeah. Canadians, in general, according to the article from the Associated Press, prefer girls. Mm-hmm. The Chinese, of course, want boys.
Because they're allowed one child.
One child, and boys are more highly valued in that culture. Mm-hmm. So when they come over here, they put in an order, and mm-hmm. the doctor does that voodoo that he do so well, and they can select the sex of their child and then, you know, re-implant the fertilized uh-huh. embryo, and then the mother carries it to term. The thing that is disturbing to us here is that the lack of regulation that this implies means that it is just a matter of time before you do see designer jeans. You do see people coming in and say, well, not only do I want a girl, I want a girl with blonde hair.
Exactly, because they are predetermining the genetic makeup of the embryo.
Yeah. We want a boy. We want to make sure he's tall. And we want to make sure they don't have any of those genes that make you fat.
This is just eugenics.
It is.
It's nothing but eugenics in disguise. And I put a quote at the top of the story from someone who was interviewed, one of the people who had gone there for this. And they're paying $50,000 to $70,000. I mean, the price of a really expensive car. In fact, you could buy a house in some areas for this.
When I was selling real estate, I hold a bunch of houses that were less than that.
Well, this is a quote. It's taken out of our bodies, and then you're getting a doctor to mix it together and put it back in. We're not messing around with God the Creator.
Oh, no?
Oh, no. Well, not only are they messing around, but any of the embryos that are not used, it's up to the parents whether or not they're destroyed or frozen. So, essentially, this is discarding life.
Yes.
Or playing around with life.
Yes.
I mean, it really, imagine, and I know that not all of our listeners are going to agree with me on this, and we don't often speak to this subject, but when I look at fertilized embryos, that's life. That's not potential life, that's life.
Yep.
To me, it's very much like looking at a room full of children that are all biologically yours and saying, I'll take you and you and you, and the rest of you go.
And we'll sell you off for research. They'll harvest you in the room down the hall. It may sound like we're taking a point and stretching it, but I don't think so either.
No.
I agree with you on this point.
No,
it is life, and this is the type of thing that is being done essentially with embryonic stem cell research, where they fertilize a bunch of eggs and let them develop to a certain point and then destroy them to harvest the cells that they want. It is prompted by a spirit, we think, of
Molech.
Well, the spirit of Molech, Molech was the demon in the Bible, remembered as a false god of the Moabites that required child sacrifice. And I think he's just gone high tech.
Yeah, I think so too. Because to them, it's still human life.
Now you can argue the point if you want, but the fact is that there is no scientist or doctor in the world who can tell you at which point the cluster of cells or potential life crosses the line and becomes actual life.
Right.
You cannot tell exactly what point that happens. And the fact is that if you were to leave it undisturbed, it would develop into a human life.
I personally believe it's once that cell starts dividing.
Yeah, it's because it's growing. Yeah. So that's a rather disturbing story that, as you say, is just eugenics dressed up. And eugenics was the driving force behind Adolf Hitler's Nazi Germany and the gas chambers.
And it was the Margaret Sanger thing over here. There was a lot of it that started on the West Coast. No one did New York. And it's a big mess. So we'll get into someday. But if you haven't heard, we've talked about it on other shows.
One other quick story here.
Raising kids.
Raising kids. Yeah. The Southern Baptists are once again making noise about pulling their children out of the public school systems.
You know, I have mixed feelings on this. How do you feel about that? I can understand the reasons for this. I really can.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you totally protect your child, then how are they going to learn? You know? Because eventually you've got to be part of the world.
That's right. We are not called to set ourselves up in little Christian enclaves completely separate from the world. In the world, but not of the world is a phrase I keep hearing.
Right.
I can understand wanting to pull the children out of a school system. In fact, we monitored the school system here in our area that while Nicole was going through.
Very carefully.
Yeah. And had there been things that she was being indoctrinated with that we found absolutely intolerable, we would have given we would very likely have pulled
Well,
there
out. Were things that we didn't agree with, but instead we took the opportunity to use those as teaching moments, just like we have all along with books and movies and things like that. And, you know, praise God, and I'm not saying it's because we're wise parents. I don't claim that at all. She's turned out to be wonderful. It could be that no matter what we did, have done it, she'd have turned out this way.
Very possible,
But looking on the other side, I can understand why a parent would want to make sure that, A, there's a good education. You know, even non-Christian and Christian arguments aside, what kind of education are kids getting these days? A lot of them can't even read when they get out of high school.
That is very true. That is very true. The question is, do parents have the ability and the qualifications to be effective teachers themselves? I mean, being a teacher is not a gift that everyone has.
No.
And secondly, and this is a horrible thought, and I certainly don't want to cast aspersions on the Southern Baptists or anyone, you know, who's thinking of pulling their kids out of public schools in favor of a private school. Mm-hmm. But you would hate to think that the reason parents are being encouraged to do this is to generate a little more
income.
Yeah, a larger market for private schools.
Well, what's sad is that we have seen that in the Christian world. We've seen an awful lot of greed because we're talking about humans.
Yes,
we all have
yes.
a fallen nature, no matter whether you're a Christian or a non-Christian. We've all got fallen natures, and we fight it every day.
Right. So to sum up, we are seeing points on both sides of this issue. We certainly understand, based on what is being taught in many of the, or not being taught in many of the public school systems mm-hmm. across America, some very compelling reasons why parents would want to take their children out. And we think that if you have the time, you have the ability and the gift to, mm-hmm. to and the patience to teach your own children at home, that's wonderful.
That's
wonderful.
You know, it's interesting. Here's an aside. The state of Missouri is starting a pilot program where there is an internet school mm-hmm. available. And if I remember this story correctly, it was they're going to start out with 500 students. Mm-hmm. And it could be kids who are being homeschooled or kids who are just that don't fit in well in their classroom setting for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And maybe they need tutoring or they need something that is just a little more advanced than the rest of the kids in the class. I don't know if this is an indicator that public schools are rethinking the model or not.
That's a good question. I don't know, and that's something we need to do more study on, especially because it's happening right here in our backyard.
Right. The only advantage that I can see that is from a conspiracy standpoint to going into that direction is that they have you from birth. Mm-hmm. Okay, these are the exercises you start with your six-month-old. Mm-hmm. Bring the child over and we'll play little Barney or, whatever on the screen and have teach him that when he sees this, that he hits this key. Mm-hmm. I mean, just little things like that. I really believe that the state wants control of our children from the moment they're born. And by giving up or changing the model to depart from that, I just don't think that's going to happen. I think they're going to find ways to keep control. And that's why I don't think the Southern Baptist Convention idea is going to float very well.
There may be a lot of strong emotion behind that movement, but you're right. There are probably some power brokers behind the scenes that are doing some quiet talking in some ears.
Speaking of people behind the scenes, Janet Phelan has had to deal with a lot of stuff going on that, frankly, was just out and out sneaky, and most of it's probably illegal, or at least it should be.
Yes. And that's why we wanted to bring her story forward and why she wanted to speak out about these things that have taken place in her family, because if they could happen to her, they could happen to you.
Well, those of you who heard part one last night, I'm sure you're waiting, so we'll go right now to part number two of the Janet Phelan interview.
We continue where we left off yesterday with investigative reporter Janet Phelan, who was dealing with a crisis in her aging mother's health. She'd been taken to the hospital. Police were called because it appeared that she was not receiving medication for her heart condition. And, Janet, you said that the police report was not quite accurate?
They lied on the 12 count. Now, this story gets worse, and there are documents that I will be discussing now, which are actually up on the web, and some of them are still in my personal collection. 3 days later, after I took my mother, my mother whose heart was failing, to the hospital, my mother got heart surgery to correct her heart. Her health was failing under the care of these people that Special Agent Jack Smith had set up as the caregivers for my mother. 3 days later, I received a notification that Melody Z. Scott and attorney J. David Horsfall had gone to court and gotten a temporary restraining order against me. They had stated that I had endangered my mother's mental health by taking her to the hospital unnecessarily. They neglected, of course, to say that she was trundled into surgery to save her life. Now, this was going to be very easy. This hearing came to hearing on August 1st of 2002. I was going to go to court and say, Judge Cunnison, and his name was Stephen Cunnison, he was the probate judge in Riverside Superior Court, where this was now a conservatorship matter. Judge Gunnison subpoenaed the medical records. My mother had surgery. Her life was saved. This was going to be easy. This was all going to go away. On August 1st of 2002, I arrived at court when court opened. This had been scheduled for 10 a.m. I sat in the court from 8:30 until court closed, and there was no hearing. Several days later, I got a notification that my restraining order was signed in permanency without a hearing. Now, I would like to take a moment here. I have two documents that will support this. One is a letter from Jack L. Smith. I insisted he came with me to court. I insisted he produce a letter supporting what happened in court. He was very reluctant to. The letter is on a website. He actually double-dated the letter. Document needs to be fixed in time to have legal relevance. He gave 2 days. I believe he was trying to mitigate the power of the letter, because what he was documenting essentially was a revocation of due process.
Mm-hmm.
A restraining order is a mini trial. You come to court, you have a hearing. I had no hearing. So in essence, my right to due process was ripped out from under me. I also have the minute order from that day stating, the charges, blah, blah, blah. Now, the way that minute orders are produced by courts as their own documents, they always list who is in court during a hearing. According to that minute order, there was no one in court, and that's exactly the way it came down. Now, this is very upsetting. This means here that we have a judge, Stephen Cunnison, who violated the Constitution in order to destroy my family.
On what grounds?
Well, on what grounds? People in this case were acting under federal orders. The orders, the command central was that house, that condo at 7911 and 18th North. And he received apparently impunity. I did report it to Stephen Cunnison, to the Commission on Judicial Performance. No one is taking any action in this case whatsoever. Judge Cunnison is still sitting on the bench, making decisions over other people's lives. At that point in time, my situation began to get rather serious. Shortly after all this was happening, I had cause to leave Jack Smith. I did not know that this man was a federal agent. I believed he was an employee only of iMagic, that he was a dear and loving boyfriend and suddenly he began to act not so dear and loving, and there began to be threats of violence. And when I left Jack Smith, I had cause to make a report of domestic violence to the West Hollywood Police Department. And I was told at that point in time by the officer that I was reporting a felony. Prior to the physical assault by Jack L. Smith, he threatened to murder me. So, of course, I would leave him. Now, once again, I pulled up the police report that was filed in the West Hollywood Division, and there was no mention of a terrorist threat to murder me, and the assault was, toned down to like a little shove. So there was really nothing going on there that the man needed to have any legal repercussions for. So, of course, charges were dropped. The fact is, he threatened to smash me on the head with a hammer until my brains ran out my ears. And then he assaulted me, and of course, I would leave that man. Now, I moved back to Long Beach. I had a little rental house, and immediately, my situation became quite dangerous. My house, a fire was set. If I had not awoken, my house may have burned down, and I might have died in the fire. I awakened and I, called the fire department. They came and the situation was resolved. Shortly thereafter, I returned home after being away for a couple of days and found that my place had been ripped up and there were drugs all over my front room. Now, I don't smoke cigarettes. I don't indulge in any kind of drug behavior whatsoever. And at that point, I'm standing aghast. I just closed and locked my door behind me. And suddenly there's a knock on the door and the police are there. Now, this situation resulted, a similar type of setup resulted in the incarceration of Fritz Springmeier, Michael Riconosciuto.
Mm-hmm.
Planting drugs in a person's apartment is a very
It's a very
common,
old tactic, yeah. And
right.
Springmeier and Riconosciuto should be names that are very familiar to hardcore conspiracy theorists. Those of you who aren't, we'll post a couple of links in the show notes so you can catch up. But
now,
continuing on.
What I did at that point in time is I kind of peeked out the window, and it was the police, and I went, oh, dear. So I had already locked and actually bolted the door, and I froze. I didn't even breathe. And I waited. It was bam, bam, bam. I waited until the steps went away, and I started scooping up and flushing and scooping up and flushing. It was very, very frightening, and more stuff started happening. I mean, I won't go into more details, but that home was targeted. I was, at that point, extremely targeted. So very shortly thereafter, on actually December 31st of 2002, I moved from that place. I was convinced I was going to die if I stayed there much longer. And I moved into a new place thinking that, you know, my life would hopefully get somewhat better. I had no idea what had happened to my mother. My mother never returned home. You know, I was not allowed to see my mother for all I knew. My mother was dead. You know, my situation, I was aware at that point in time that I seemed to have a tail on me when I went out, a lot of strange stuff, and I was just trying to walk through it, get into another home, and hopefully try to start, you know, addressing things. I was calling the Washington Post, I was calling the New York Times, I was calling lawyers like crazy. You know, the judge is breaking the law, my mother has disappeared. Well, on January 3rd of 2003, just a few days after I had moved to this new home, there had been another threat against me, and I did something very unwise. I walked into the Long Beach Police Department. I stated I had been threatened. I was met by an officer, Lauren Dawson. Lauren Dawson informed me that my life was over. He put handcuffs on me. I was taken to a nearby squad car. He took me to, the windows were dark in the squad car. I don't know exactly where I was taken to. He told me that he was functioning under the auspices of protection of the president, and I was going to be given a drug overdose and die.
Hmm.
Now, I was given a drug overdose. There were several officers there. Dawson was the only one I can identify positively, as he was in police uniform, and his badge read Dawson. The others were in plain clothes. I was injected in the right arm with something. I immediately lost consciousness. Now, I would like to say something for a moment in memory of Gary Webb and Jim Hatfield, both of who were reporters who were dealing with some issues that went also back to George Bush. They also died of drug-induced overdoses. I do believe that the appropriate lingo here is suicide by cop.
Well, now, Webb, according to the county coroner in his jurisdiction, was suicided with two gunshots to the head.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. It was. I'm sorry. Yes, it was not drug overdose. He was suicided by exactly
two gunshots
to the head. Amazing man, that Gary Webb. Can't kill himself with one gunshot, so shoots himself again.
Mm-hmm.
So, basically, you know, the suicidality of our police department against those who are stepping into things and becoming proactive. I, at that point in time, did not understand that there was a federal involvement in what was happening to my family. I thought there was an enormous amount of corruption in Riverside County, and for some reason, the Long Beach Police Department had begun acting peculiarly in some other venues, which I didn't discuss in this particular broadcast, but I didn't get it. That I had stepped into a federal situation, or rather the federal situation had stepped into my life. I was essentially, the attempted murder by Dawson and others happened before I even understood what the situation was. But I believe at that point in time, I had become so aggressive in trying to defend my mother's life. I was alerting so many people, attempting to at least, in the media and elsewhere, as to the amounts of corruption going on here, you know, the lies, the breaking of the law, the stripping of rights, that I had at that point become a threat. I believe when Jack Smith first showed up in my life, I was not considered a threat. This, I think, was going to be an easy hit. You had an elderly You had an elderly mother. You had a sister, Judith, who was obviously a pretty much sold-out sociopath. And you had a daughter, Janet, who had ill health, had been bedridden for some time, and was not going to be much of a problem. And the situation morphed into something else entirely. Well, unlike Gary Webb or Jim Hatfield or Vic Foster or others, I survived. I woke up 2 days later. I was on a heart monitor. I was in a Long Beach hospital. And I was told at that point in time that I probably was not going to be getting out of that hospital. There was a lot of very strange activity around me there. There was only one other person on the ward. There was a lot of very scary stuff happening, and I did get out. And at that point in time, I got out of that hospital with some difficulty. I tried to go back home to that apartment I had rented at that point 5 days before. This is now, I believe, January 5th. And I went home to find an apartment that was occupied by another family.
So you had left your apartment into which you just moved in Long Beach.
Right.
And walked into what appears to be an attempted hit. And once you got out of the hospital several days later, found that your place had already been rented as though you were already dead.
Right. Right. As though I were already dead. Now, I want to say something about that apartment. Concerning conspiracies, after I left Jack Smith, I got some papers back from him that were my papers, but apparently, inadvertently, he had included one of his notebooks. Now, the man I rented the apartment from, his name was Riley. And, by the way, I did try to call Riley when I found out my apartment that I just rented was occupied by someone else. Interestingly mm-hmm. enough, Riley's number was disconnected. And I didn't have an address for him, so that was the end of my communications with Riley.
Huh.
But these papers that I got back from Jack Smith had something. This was, I believe, in August of 2002. This was about a month and a half before I left Jack Smith because of his felony domestic violence against me. In this notebook, in Jack Smith's hand, delineated three meetings that he had. I believe it was like August 13th or 14th of 2002. One was with the head of the West Hollywood Police Department. His name was Lieutenant Goldman. He was the acting head. This is the police department that lied on the police report concerning his violence against me.
Mm-hmm.
He had a meeting with him. About a half an hour later, he had a meeting with the prosecutor in the DA's office who passed over on the charges against him.
Hmm.
And he had a meeting with someone named Riley.
How interesting.
Now, I didn't move until December 31st, but he did have a meeting with someone named Marley. Now, whether or not it was the same Marley is not something that I know. So at that point, I became homeless. I had nowhere to live. Very shortly thereafter, a few months later, I went to my bank. I'd had a bank account, and I discovered that my account had been seized. There was no more bank account. So I had no home, I had no bank account, and I was homeless. I was 50 years old. I was a graduate school educated reporter. I have had publications in the Los Angeles Times, Long Beach Press Telegram, other venues. I've been a reporter over 25 years, and I'm suddenly homeless and have no money.
On what grounds?
Had no money coming into the trust.
On what grounds did they seize your bank account?
I was told nothing. I was told nothing about my home, and I was told nothing about my bank account. And when I attempted to communicate with the bank manager, she hung up on me. So, you know, of course, one starts calling the ACLU. One starts calling the Center for Constitutional Rights. And what I have learned is that these supposed agencies to defend a person's constitutional and civil rights will not respond to targeting situations. I also, this became abundantly clear in when I was attempting to intervene in the targeting of reporter Susan Lindauer.
Right.
Being held without a trial. I believe she's now in New York.
Right.
The Center for Constitutional Rights also did not respond to any inquiries about getting assistance for Susan Lindauer. The ACLU did not respond at all. The lawyers that I contacted, with the exception of Liz Fink, these, you know, wonderful defenders of constitutional rights with the NLG and other supposedly civil rights concerned organizations, they just don't even respond to the phone.
No, the ACLU seems to do much better at picking on rural school districts without a whole lot of money to fight battles of constitutionality.
If individual people end up in terrible trouble, as what has happened to me, what has happened to Susan Lindauer, what happened to Michael Morrissey and some others that I know, apparently the organizations that are there to defend our rights turn into wet noodles.
Janet, let me ask, what's the connection here? I mean, what is the... What made you such a target of interest for... You say this is a federal issue? You believe that these were feds who were trying to...
Yeah, Jack Smith is a fed.
Okay.
Nobody can seize your bank account except the federal government.
Okay.
At this point in time, I understand. I have more of an understanding of what I stepped into it. At the time of the assault against me by Officer Laura Dawson and others, I was pretty... confused about what was going on.
Okay, and again, just to clarify, at the time that you first became involved with Jack L. Smith, you were not aware that he was an agent with the FBI?
Oh, my goodness, no.
He's a special agent with the FBI, is that correct?
I believe it's the FBI. He may be with the NSA. I'm not completely sure at this point in time, but he is definitely an agent.
Okay, and what documentation do you have to...
Well, that is not something I can go into.
Okay, all right.
It took a very long time to discuss.
Okay. But his cover was that he was working as an employee of a company called iMagic.
Right.
Okay. You became involved with him, and then as time went on, apparently it became more necessary to silence you. For what reason?
Well, as I said, I believe... That the original understanding, and there was a tap on the phone due to my father's work, was going to be a very easy hit. Jack was going to keep me busy, and my mom was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at this point in time, the situation has completely morphed into something else entirely. My health problems began to resolve. I became much more proactive and much more, I had much more capability than I believe was the original determination. And at this point in time, I have walked through things. I walked through the assault by Laura Dawson, and I survived. In September of 2003, you understand, I'm now homeless, you know, there began to be other assaultive behavior around me. And I got very concerned. I got a little bit of money together by hook or by crook, and I left the country.
Mm-hmm.
I was scooped up in Mexico. I was detained, and I was repeatedly tortured. I was detained for 29 days in Mexico City, and I was tortured. Now, at this point in time, I understand more what was going on around my family. Now, I am Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was Jewish. I am not a religiously Jewish person, but I have a Jewish bloodline. A lot of people are talking about George W. Bush. They are using the Hitler analogy.
Mm-hmm.
He's behaving as, you know, the stripping of rights, the attacking of other countries. But not too many people are saying that he's killing Jewish people.
No.
And no, they're not. Now, I have been very insistent in my work on the water system, saying that among other targets, it will target Jewish homes.
Mm-hmm.
I have been very insistent on that. And I have been very insistent in stating that what happened to my family was a hit on a Jewish family. A Jewish family that was seen as very vulnerable, and we do know the Nazis did always target vulnerable people. They targeted the disabled, they targeted people who were not considered the Übermensch. We have a family where there's an elderly woman, where there's a younger woman who has had quite a bit of health problems and has not seen as much, too much going on in terms of ability to defend the family. And there's a sister, Judith Phelan, who is an utter and complete sociopath and will sell out her own family for money, which is what my sister did. Now, at this point in time, the situation became quite a bit different because of my own you know, my own confidence and my own recovery from a lot of the health problems.
Well, Janet, let's stop right there for just a moment. What we'll do when we continue is take that to the next step as we try to connect some dots here and see what this means in terms of its implications for our society and the people who may be listening. It is a distressing story, just even looking on the personal level and looking at what happened to you. But as we've pointed out with the Susan Lindauer case as well, that if it happened to you, it can happen to others. We'll discuss that and what you think this all means for us when we talk again. And our discussion with Janet Phelan will continue tomorrow on PID Radio.
Well, if you're with us tomorrow, you will get to hear part three of the Janet Phelan interview. And then we've got coming up next week for you, Mr. Jerry Smith, who's going to talk about HAARP.
Yes. Good timing for that, what with the first tropical storm, almost hurricane of the season.
It's really funny, too, because Jeb Bush was preparing everybody for this monster storm to come through, as if somehow he had this idea that it was going to ramp up way bigger than it did. And in fact, it fizzled.
Yeah, thankfully.
Yeah, so we don't know what those red snaky bars were all about.
Yeah. Well, we're going to keep our eyes on the Atlantic and the Gulf of Mexico, because after last year, you just, boy, I mean, it was a lot worse than anyone predicted. So hopefully this year will be a lot quieter, especially the folks that are still rebuilding and living in FEMA trailers down along the Gulf Coast.
Oh,
they don't
that.
Need another
No, they
another
really don't.
Hit.
And it looked, frankly, when I was looking at Alberto in the very early stages of the Gulf, it looked to me like Alberto was veering west slightly enough to aim right at New Orleans.
Yeah. We'll see, because I'm sure before the end of the year, we'll see something that'll come up the Gulf and really get a lot of people there very, very nervous. So
yep, that is the truth.
We'll keep praying that that God spares the Gulf Coast, at least for this year.
That's right.
Well, we will give you more details as our summertime conspiracy series continues on our tinfoil hat contest. And, of course, our email address is always there for your comments, suggestions, guest ideas, or stories we might have missed, radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
And you can always join the forum. It is peeringintodarkness.com/forum, where you can talk about tinfoil hats if you want to, and even share ideas. But you know what? If you give away your good idea, then
that's right,
you may not win, and the person who steals your good idea, borrows your good idea, will actually be the one to win, because you're going to get your choice of for the first place. Again, funny, original, high-tech, those three categories. First place, you get your choice of a PID Radio t-shirt or a PID Radio coffee mug.
That's right. So you can sit in your bunker with coffee and donuts while the rest of the world outside just falls apart.
That's right. And the runners-up in each category, you get your choice of books. One of the books that we've written. So you want to think about that. And in the meanwhile, as you're putting together your plans, I'm going to remain Sharon Gilbert.
I'm Derek Gilbert. Thank you for listening to PID Radio.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Gonna step up to the microphone. Say it loud.